How's it going, everybody? This is episode 101 of the Clapper Cast. Got to get used to that that many numbers for our episodes. This is, August 23rd. Might be a little bit later by the time this is published. But I'm joined by my co-host, Sean. I'm Burke. Sean, how's it going today?
Not too bad. You know, I had to throw on the Habs jersey today. I couldn't bear to wear the Oilers one as we trashed their offseason in a few minutes.
It's that bad. You can't even wear the jersey of your favorite team.
Nope, not this time.
Wow. Yeah, well, we'll get into them pretty quick here. We're doing our Pacific previews, or our off-season ratings, I guess.
Off-season review.
We'll go alphabetical. I mean, why shake it up now with the last one? I'm not super excited about what this team has done, but maybe you are. We'll start off with the Anaheim Ducks here. So,
What is there to be excited about, even? They literally haven't done a thing.
Yeah, I mean, did they re-sign Ryan Getzlaff? That's pretty much it.
They re-signed Getzlaff, re-signed Comtois, and signed Mason McTavish, who was their first rounder this draft.
And lost Hayden Fleury in the expansion draft.
Yeah,
so
that's all I can think of that they had done.
Yeah.
So, you know, in terms of actually talking about this, it seems to be an understandably disappointing but also reasonable off-season approach for the team, because they're kind of in that rebuild state. I've talked about this before with at least one other team, where they're kind of in that state of the rebuild where they don't need to do anything significant. They just kind of need to let the prospects and the team develop. They're not really at a point where they should be trying to make a big play on anybody, but they're also not at a point where they should be selling anything off, because the remaining assets, looking at like Fowler, Lindholm, and John Gibson, like you can't really get rid of them. And at this point, you want to keep somebody around to help, you know, keep the culture going, and just to, you know, bring and help acclimate the new guys in.
Yeah, and they've got some exciting players that are going to be, you know, joining the roster this season. You know, they've got Trevor Zegras looking to, you know, have probably a bit better of a season than he did in his rookie year. And then Jamie Drysdale on the blue line.
Yeah, and looking at their defense right now, I mean, their cap-friendly roster only has 5 on the NHL roster. There's a handful of NHL-capable defenders in the non-roster, but the main one is Drysdale. So I think this is probably his spot to lose, is that 6th spot.
Yeah, I would agree. Other than that, it's not a lot going on here.
The Anaheim Ducks exist.
True. Can confirm. They've got a lot of younger players that, you know, they're going to be competing for their spots. And so, like, it'll be exciting in that respect. But I don't think that they're going to be, you know, winning a lot of games.
No.
This
could be a season where we see them end up being active, very active, closer to the trade deadline. If they can find homes for, like, Adam Henrique, Jakob Silverberg, Ricard Raquel, like, even maybe someone wants Getzlaff as a rental, you know, that type of thing. Selling off those types of things to, you know, start making plays for more stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, they've got, like, Max Comtois, Troy Terry, you know, Zegras. You know, there's some young players to be excited about, but yeah, I think you're right. They'll probably be looking to get some assets back, some younger prospects, and some draft picks and stuff like that going into next season. So yeah, I think they'll probably be probably the bottom of the division. There's been some teams shaking around, but I see them as definitely one of the weaker teams in the division, and it's a weak division. So no real shot at a wild card for them.
Yeah, they definitely have, like, probably the lowest ceiling. Because at least LA could go on a tear with their prospects. San Jose at least has decent, you know, collection of decent players. But Anaheim just doesn't have much of a ceiling at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. we gave them their due, but we'll move on to Calgary Flames. So you're obviously your favorite team in the division.
Might have to be after this.
So I think the Flames are kind of at an interesting crossroads here. They lost their captain in the expansion draft, obviously. So, you know, Mark Giordano has been, you know, a absolute, you know, pillar of their team for so many years. And they're not going to have him anymore. So what does that mean? You know, are they going to pick a new captain? Who's that going to be? Is that going to set the tone moving forward? You know, they could be a very different team. And so, I mean, they brought in a few new guys. So why don't we talk about that, I guess. You know, Blake Coleman is I think, one of the bigger guys that they brought in, you know, coming off the back-to-back championship there in Tampa.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that contract for Coleman?
It's definitely the best of both worlds for him, I think.
term and cash?
Yeah, it's kind of like that Barclay Goodrow deal with the Rangers, right? You know, they've got, you know, a six-year, 4.9 cap hit for a guy who was on, like, fourth line in Tampa, I guess.
Yeah, he's kind of in that bottom six. I don't know exactly.
Definitely not a fourth line on any other team probably in the league, but you know, when he was in New Jersey, I think he was like the top line. At one point he was like scoring all their goals for them. You know, I think it could be the case of, like, I read this about, like, the Bruins, how there's, like, you know, a lot of the bottom six guys in Boston, they do really well in Boston, and then they go somewhere else and they don't look as good because, like, the system's different or whatever. I don't know if this is going to be the same case. You know, Tampa Bay is obviously a different team, but, like, he fit into that niche role in limited minutes in Tampa Bay, and now going into perhaps a bit bigger of a role in Calgary, you know, is that going to work? I think it has a good shot of working, because he just, you know, he's one of those guys that works super hard every shift, and just, like, I think that's kind of the mentality that Calgary might have been looking for, is just somebody who brings that to the table, where it's like, work hard every time you're out there, because they've got a bit of an issue with that in Calgary, where the guys take, you know, entire games off, or at least look like they are, you know, looking at Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau mostly for that. So to have, you know, a guy in the middle six who can, you know, compete, you know, kind of fit that Andrew Mangiapane, with a bit, maybe a bit higher of a, you know, I don't know, stat line or whatever, maybe sets the tone for the rest of the roster a bit. And a guy who's won two cups, I think it makes sense.
Yeah, you know, Calgary, the last couple off seasons, they had gone, you know, they've been trying to push themselves over the top. So they went the one off season and signed a whole bunch of former Oilers. The next off season, they brought in a bunch of Canucks. So, you know, maybe actually looking to a winning team to bring in their players. Maybe that's the better strategy.
Yeah, I think you're probably onto something there. sorry, I got something in my throat. Yeah, I think that makes sense. You know, the next guy that they, probably the bigger guy that they brought in, is Nikita Zadorov. So to replace that, you know, defensive type defenseman, Zadorov is a guy who absolutely crushes people. So I see him being well liked in Calgary.
Yeah. So to kind of build off of what you were saying about the team's lack of intensity, the players taking games off, they go and bring in Coleman, who is a, you know, power forward type. He's a more physically engaged guy, a couple hits per game. And Zadorov, who hits everything in sight. So, you know, that was kind of a theme of what they're bringing in, is to help bring up that intensity, bring up that engagement, the physical engagement of the team.
Yeah, I think it's quite clear. I think Zadorov had to go to arbitration, though, and he was awarded a one-year contract at $3.7 million. So we'll see if he ends up re-signing with the team after that, but... you know, kind of a interesting to go to arbitration with someone who just came over. But I think he did. I might have been mistaken on that, but I'm pretty sure it did. But either way, I think he'll be well liked there. I think that their blue line will be interesting without Giordano on it. You know, they've got Noah Hanifin, Rasmus Anderson, Tanev, Zadorov, Juuso Välimäki, and then Oliver Shillington. Is he ready to kind of finally take that permanent spot in the lineup? He's going to get his opportunity now. And then I think probably the most interesting thing for me for Calgary is the fact that they traded away David Riddick last season.
Yeah, that confused me at the time too.
So now they're left with Jacob Markstrom, who is, you know, undeniably a starter in the NHL, but like who it seems like they're kind of stuck in the same position almost, where it's like, okay, who do they have to back up? I know they got Dan Vladar.
Yeah,
from,
I was
from
just
Boston,
gonna say I think Vladar is probably their goal for backup. They traded a third round pick for him, and looking at the rest of the goalies under contract, it's, you know, Vladar's really the only one with a couple games of NHL experience, really.
Yeah, it's just interesting because it's like, you know, he's got like 5 games experience in the NHL, so yeah. You know, if it works out, great, but if it doesn't, ugh. I know, you know, Markstrom is obviously my guy and I follow him a lot, and he does really well when he plays a lot of games, but you know, that could bite you in the ass if you get to playoffs and your goalie's tired. So
that's the thing, all it takes is one groin injury and the goalie's out for a couple weeks, and suddenly you lose 6 straight games because you don't have a backup.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, the minor things that they've done, or like the, you know, guys who are perhaps a bit less of an impactful on the lineup, they got Seattle legend Tyler Pitlick, and then they signed Trevor Lewis, you know, kind of a grindy type bottom six, bottom three, fourth liner guy. So, yeah, I mean, like, They're going to look quite similar, but, you know, they lost their captain, so I think they could have an interesting shift in the way that they play the game.
Yeah, well, that was a whole storyline for the Flames last season, was that leadership void or whatever was happening in the locker room with, you know, Matthew Tkachuk kind of on his path of, you know, whatever he wanted the team to be, and he was kind of alone in that. So it's a real... It could be a really... crucial moment for the direction of the franchise, depending where they go with the next captain. You know, do they give it to Matthew Tkachuk and, you know, have him have his mentality lead the team, or do they give it to someone else? And, you know, if they give it to someone else, does that kind of spell the end for Tkachuk in Calgary? If the team isn't going to show him the right type of support, if they're not going to, you know, kind of go behind his mentality, like, what does that say for his future with the team?
Yeah. And, you know, it's Daryl Sutter's, you know, first full season, I guess, back with the team.
Yeah.
So, you know, are they bringing in these big boys just for him or what? I think they could be very interesting. You know, it could go really good. It could go really bad. I don't know. I think, you know, if something doesn't change, like, they're probably going to blow up the team at the end of the season. Like, if I mean, Gaudreau's got 1 year left on his contract. Monahan's got 2.
Tkachuk's in his last year, too, but he's an RFA after this.
Yeah. So, you know, like, it could be an interesting time for Calgary and their fans, you know, moving forward. What is that team going to look like? And, you know, they also... what's his name? Sam Bennett, you know, got traded out and now he's doing really well in Florida. So it's like, oh man, how good would Sam Bennett look if he was here and playing that way? Maybe let's bring in a guy like Blake Coleman who kind of plays the same.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Sam Bennett kind of got shoehorned into like a bottom six forward role. He goes to Florida, starts getting top 6 minutes and doing well. Blake Coleman, someone who got put into that bottom six role, did really well, so now they're hoping that, you know, maybe it's the right fit for the role that they needed Bennett to be in.
Yeah. So I think like the change of scenery really benefited Bennett, and so we'll see if Blake Coleman can kind of be the guy that they always kind of wanted him to be.
Yeah.
Interesting. I think there's a few interesting storylines with Calgary for next season.
They'll be a team to follow, but it might not be for their on-ice performance. There might be... might be some interesting storylines from the locker room as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, I guess we'll... here it is, Sean.
how do you intro this one, right? Sounds so excited.
Yeah, so, you know, vying for perhaps worst offseason of the bunch here, the Edmonton Oilers. So without further ado here, I'll let you take it away.
All right, well, We've got an absolute collection of roster turnover, roster trades, signings, and confusion. First and most importantly, we start off with re-signing Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Everyone, you know, fan favorite, start off the offseason on a good note, retain him for 8 years, 5.125 per season. Then we start moving into free agency period, and suddenly Adam Larson doesn't want to re-sign at Edmonton and gets taken in the expansion draft, which is a huge loss for the team because he is quite underrated in what he provides in his defensive physical stability. Now suddenly they don't have the right-sided defensive shutdown guy that Larson was. So Ken Holland goes and re-signs Tyson Barry for 3 years at $4.5 million. Doesn't help at all. Then he realizes that the right side is Tyson Barry, Ethan Bear, and Evan Bouchard. Doesn't like that. So he signs Cody Ceci. It's a four-year, 3.25 per season contract. Now he suddenly created a surplus of defenders on the right side. So he trades Ethan Bear for Warren Fogle. You know, up front, this was talked about for a month before it even happened. They were trying to get his rights to give him an eight-year contract, but Zach Hyman got signed by the Oilers. 7 years, $5.5 million per season. I don't think Hyman's ever really put up more than 45-ish points a season, which, like, that's a lot. That's a huge contract. Yeah, 41 points is his career high, 5.5 per season. You know, then they go and re-sign Darnell Nurse for 8 years at $9.25 million. So he's going to be making more than Dougie Hamilton. He's going to be making more than Cale Makar. Is Darnell Nurse.
And just a quick word on Hyman too is that in 32 playoffs games he's got 13 points.
Yeah. You know, that's
so that's like
speech bit speechless on that, right?
Yeah.
And then so... yeah, I'm going to you know, move over to some of the trades here. Didn't even touch on the Duncan Keith trade. But they trade Caleb Jones who was most likely to get picked by Seattle in the expansion draft, and a conditional third-round pick for Duncan Keith at full price. Like, yeah. this just... I have no words to describe how you end up giving up a prospect and a draft pick for a cap dump.
Yeah, in a world where teams are just being like, yeah, we're getting nothing out of this trade. We're taking on that contract.
So
why are you giving up?
Why are you giving up things? Like Andrew Ladd, Shane Gostisbehere, all these other cap dump trades, the team giving up the player with the cap hit they don't want, gives up extra draft picks to get rid of them. But Edmonton gives up a draft pick to get the cap dump.
And then you know, Holland says, what do you want me to get him for free? Yes.
Yes, actually.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly
yes,
what we
actually,
wanted.
Actually, other teams are getting these guys for free.
Chicago's like, thanks for the cap space. Now we'll get Fleury and sign
Seth
Jones.
The storyline that I like off of this one is that Edmonton trades for Duncan Keith to give Chicago the cap space to sign Seth Jones, to that massive $9.5 million contract, which also then gives Darnell Nurse the comparable to sign his massive deal. So there's that storyline as well. Then we move into the trade that was made during the draft. Edmonton, a team that doesn't exactly have much in net. Their goalie prospects are okay, but they're not really high profile. They have an opportunity to take Jesper Wallstedt. You know, one of the best goalie prospects of the last decade. Like, you know, you shouldn't really pass up on that. They trade down a couple of picks with Minnesota to take a forward instead. Which I don't know what, you know, this one I'll give up to maybe there's something in the prospect interviews or whatever in the combine they didn't like. But the optics of that one are just terrible as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, there's so much to digest here. It's just ridiculous to bring in Duncan Keith, and a 38-year-old Duncan Keith, and to give up a young defenseman and a pick for that is insane. And then to bring Cody Ceci too.
You know, in Ceci's defense, he was apparently solid in Pittsburgh last year in his limited role. Yeah, so he's going to be playing second pairing at Edmonton with Duncan Keith, probably, so that's not going to be much of a limited role.
I mean, in a vacuum, I like the Barry thing. Like, in a vacuum.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think it's great. Good. You know, the guy's like a 50-point-per-season defenseman. Like, that's
yeah, not on the power play. Like, that's awesome. Once he clicked, it clicked. And, like, to have him on the power play, it makes a lot of sense. But, like, your blue line isn't strong enough to have a guy that's just a forward.
Yeah. You don't exactly have the coverage when you lose a guy like Larson to keep Barry for three more seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's no fault of Barry on his own. You know, he brings something unique to the game or to the team, and he's good at it, but it's just like the other roster moves make it look like, oh, man,
yeah.
We could have done something else.
Like, he goes in, you know, all this stuff is Ken Holland going in, making a problem on defense, and then continuing to fix it with worse and worse solutions.
Yeah, so a blue line that had, you know, Larson, Nurse, Barry, Bear, you know, Chris Russell, Slater Cuckoo, Bouchard, turns into something a lot worse.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, I didn't even touch on the goalie thing where he re-signs Mike Smith $2.2 million per season for 2 years. He's 39. He had one good season.
And you keep Koskinen.
I can understand that there isn't much of a market for that, but there's also now we're sitting with 2-3 teams here that have literally like third stringers as their starters in Buffalo, Arizona. You know, there's teams with cap space and a need for at least a semi-competent goalie, and we're still going to roll in with Smith and Koskinen.
Yeah, and with that defensive core, I think you kind of need a stronger goaltender to make up for that. You know, if they had won that Markstrom sweepstakes last offseason, you know, it'd be a different story here, but they're sticking with the tandem they had, and Koskinen is like, that contract has been bad since day one, so it's a tough look. And then on forward, you know, like the additions that they made here,
I do like the forward additions as players. Like, Zach Hyman will be a useful addition to like a McDavid wing. You know, Warren Fogle is someone who's going to be solid in that bottom six, probably on the third line. And he can't actually put up points. And Derek Ryan is extremely underrated in his ability to play a defensive bottom six forward role. So he's going to fill in that third center spot for a little bit as he teaches Ryan McLeod how to take over that throughout the season.
Well, what I was going to say is that with the additions on forward, I don't see them scoring enough to, you know, make up for the back end weakness, right?
No, because you're still relying almost entirely on McDavid and Draisaitl.
And your power play.
Yeah.
I think they'll be middle of the pack. They're moving in the wrong direction just because of their blue line and the goalie situation not getting fixed. And, you know, they're tying up a lot of money in, a lot in Hyman and Nurse. Two seasons here of Duncan Keith at 5.5. So it's like, I don't know. I think like the main gripe I have is that they shipped out Ethan Bear. Because I liked him.
Yeah, absolutely. And, he's very beloved around the city.
Yeah, so it's just, like, to ship that guy out and to bring in, like, Cody Ceci, it's like, ugh, what are you doing? Like,
sour taste, right?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. I see, like, the team's issues that they had in playoffs and everything, like, not getting remotely touched here. and like, relying on Mike Smith to be like remarkable again at 39 is just it's risky.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. And this is where, you know, I was hypothesizing that apparently like someone like Alexander Georgiev wanted out of New York because he wasn't going to get any much playing time with Shesterkin there. And I was like, okay, why don't you try and maybe a three-way trade with like Buffalo/Arizona and New York to send Georgiev to Edmonton, Koskinen to one of those two teams, and swap some random other assets around to make it right for all of them.
Yeah, hell, there's a lot of goalies around, right? Like, I mean, like, look at Dallas. They've got Ben Bishop, Holtby, Hudobin, and Ottinger now. So it's like you could maybe,
you know, there is a surplus there in some spots.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like Holland is like, I don't know. He's doing what he did in Detroit, just giving like big contracts and bringing in all these old guys, and I don't know. Not a fan of the direction that the team is moving in for sure. So, I think like they could do well, you know, if their power play is like to number one again. And they just are able to score at will, sure. But, I mean, it's a weak division, so who knows. But I don't see them winning it. I don't see them being the worst, but it's going to be a tough go for them, I think, to make a run. Well, I guess, unless there's anything else you wanted to say about, the team that you love, we can move on to... the Los Angeles Kings.
The last note I wanted to talk about was just Evan Bouchard quickly. So I was reading a bit earlier today about, because Evan Bouchard was obviously chosen a bit over Ethan Bear as the right-sided prospect of the future or whatever. So Bouchard got scratched basically the entirety of the last season. Didn't really get much game time at all. The third pairing right-sided spot is his basically going into the season, but Dave Tippett said that he expects Bouchard or wants Bouchard to be playing alongside Nurse on the top pairing by the end of the season or at some point during the year, and he also wants Bouchard to start penalty killing. So that would be good to round out his game, because he's more of an offensive guy, to give him some time to work on his defensive stuff and, you know, learn how to penalty kill, become all-around guy. The part that I'm unsure on is that Tippett, over his last couple seasons here, he's got this tendency to, you know, say everybody needs to earn their spot, but then a prospect or younger player makes one mistake, they get benched for a month, and the veterans have, like, free roam to do whatever they want. You know, they'll screw up 10 plays in a row and not even get demoted. So, I'm interested to see if Bouchard can actually stay in the lineup consistently, or if he's going to get scratched right away again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, talk is cheap, so, you know, I'm gotta show that you're gonna do what you say and be able to accept the mistakes that young players make. But, you know, if you want them on the top pairing, like, the mistakes are gonna be quite obvious, so, hey, I don't know. I think that might be a fact that it's like, oh, our depth is crap, so we're gonna thrust you into, a role here, so. Yeah, it'd be interesting to watch that, I guess. Well, I guess we'll move on to the LA Kings, and they've been making some moves.
On the flip side of what I said about Anaheim, you can tell LA is starting to want to turn the corner here, because they're making moves to bring in recognizable players. Bringing in Alex Edler for a year on defense, bringing in Philip Deneau on a long-term deal, trading for Victor Arvidsson. It's all signs that they're going to start trying to work their way back up the division pretty quickly here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've got a lot of really talented young players that could, crack the lineup and help them get to where they want to be.
They have an entire NHL roster worth of prospects that are NHL capable.
Yeah.
Like, this is an insane prospect.
Pretty exciting, yeah. Yeah, it's insane. I mean, like, they've got, like, Kaliev, Quinton Byfield. They've got like Jared Anderson Dolan. They traded and got Tyler Madden when they shipped out to Foley. Alex Turcotte. Like, they've got such a deep pool of prospects, and they've also got a few contracts coming up set to expire next season. So, you know, as these younger guys come into the league, they can pay them. They've got money coming off the books, and I think the addition of Phil Deneau is going to be huge for them, just to, perhaps stop getting scored on so much, because they were actually last year they had like a surprising period where they were competitive, and then it kind of fell off the rails a bit because they stopped winning games, obviously. But I think the addition of a guy like Phil Deneau is going to be huge. And Victor Arvidsson, I like that one. Bringing in him, another guy who can score. I think he was ready for a change of scenery. I know, like, Philip Forsberg tweeted out like a thumbs down as soon as he got traded because they're friends. But, you know, Arvidsson has been kind of struggling a bit in Nashville, so I think this should be good for him to play with some different guys and to get a different look. And then, yeah, I mean, like, like you said, it looks like they're trying to turn the corner and bringing in the guys that they did. And I think it's going to be an exciting season and going into next season for the LA Kings.
Absolutely. Like, this is going to be kind of a team that's going to be very fun to watch right away. Just watching all these young guys start to develop, make their NHL debuts, and, you know, they've got a ton of offensive potential here, so it's just going to be great to see what style of play they can find to help maximize all that. You know, like you said, I like that move to bring in Philip Deneau. I love that move for them because he is going to provide so much on that defensive side of being a forward. You know, the penalty kill, the defensive side. They already have Kopitar, and now they're going to have Philip Deneau in there as well. It'll be interesting to see how that deal works out, you know, 3-4 years down the road once the prospects start making their debuts and push Deneau a bit farther down the depth chart. It'll be kind of interesting to see if that was part of the arrangement, is that, you know, an understanding that in a few years his role in the team is going to change a bit and possibly be reduced as he gets replaced on the roster, or if it's kind of a, we'll bring you in for a few years and then we'll trade the last few years or something like that. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think it makes sense now for sure. And like, you know, Deneau's contract's on the high side, but, you know, I think like he really kind of showed his value during the last playoffs. And then just a bunch of like the other contracts they have are quite reasonable. And then, you know, I say that knowing that Anze Kopitar is at $10 million and Drew Doughty's at $11 million for, you know, until the end of time. and so they have to be smart with the deals that they make. And it, you know, credit to Rob Blake. Like he's been doing a pretty good job with, you know, keeping the rest of the deals under control and still, you know, icing, you know, a team that can be fun to watch.
Yeah. And they've found some success over the last few seasons here with a bit of a resurgence from Dustin Brown. Kopitar's been staying consistently good. And, you know, a couple of guys like Alex Iafallo and Adrian Kempe that have just been, you know, solid players, not stars or anything, but they've been, you know, they've been slowly working their way up the lineup and turning into, you know, good players for what they do on the roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think like they could be, you know, I think it's going to be a positive season for them. You know, they've got a few key new players, some exciting guys to watch. You know, like we said, Phil Deneau is going to really add that component that they didn't have before. You know, that really 200-foot player. So yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think that they'll probably be, you know, in the middle of the pack. They might surprise, might go on a bit of a run like they did last year. So, but we'll see, I guess, how long they can keep that going if they do get hot. And, you know, if Cal Peterson and Jonathan Quick can be a, you know, a solid tandem for them.
Yeah, and I think Peterson had a really solid season last year, splitting time with Jonathan Quick. And it'll be probably his year now to take over that starter's net fully, because I think Quick's been a bit on the downswing. I think he's been dealing with some injuries, so probably about time to swap that up there.
Well, I guess to round out the California teams here, we'll move on to the San Jose Sharks. And I think there's two main stories with San Jose. The first of which, the probably less spicy storyline, is that they bought out Martin Jones, finally. You know, Jones was not good in San Jose. I think he was like league worst in almost every stat, almost.
Generally, he was, yeah, like statistically one of, if not the worst starting goalie in the NHL for seasons now.
Yeah, so they bought him out finally. And then they bring in James Reimer and Aiden Hill. So Aiden Hill's a you know, a younger goalie that filled in Arizona, did pretty good, made a shit ton of starts in a row in Arizona. And then James Reimer, you know, was kind of the third guy in Carolina last year, but played quite a few games. Okay. I don't know if it's going to be better. Jones was bad, so it's like it probably will be better, but it's like, I don't know to what extent it will be better.
Yeah, I mean, Aiden Hill's got fairly respectable numbers in his, you know, limited action over the last three seasons in Arizona. I'm pretty sure his numbers were better than what Martin Jones put up. I don't have Jones's up right now, but
it's a safe assumption.
Yeah, safe assumption, yep. so it can't be worse, and it could be a case where it's like Aiden Hill's one of those guys that kind of got overlooked in Arizona because they had such a strong grouping of Antti Raanta and Darcy Kuemper to go with most of the time when they were both healthy, that Hill just kind of got overlooked. So maybe it's kind of his time to break out a bit. You know, James Reimer's at least serviceable backup journeyman goalie. So it should be better. Can't be worse.
Yeah.
Like, I remember at this time last year, but going into the last season, we're talking about the Sharks tandem being Martin Jones and Devin Dubnyk. You know, I feel like this is at least an improvement on that.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. And then the second storyline is just the ongoing saga with Evander Kane. Just like, what the hell is going to happen with him and his contract?
Is he even going to be
playing? Yeah.
Is he even going to be allowed to play next season? Because he's currently under investigation for betting on his own games.
Yeah. And there's, you know, that was the way that came out. It was very soap opera-esque with his, I don't know, future ex-wife, airing their laundry on Instagram, and it's very messy. And you know, he was already having a lot of weird things with like his whole debt situation and not being able to pay that back. And there was rumors of like the team terminating his contract and then re-signing him to a new contract so he could get out of some things. But it's like, what is going on? He makes $7 million. He's a pretty big part of the offense on that team. Is he going to be there? Who knows?
Did you see the other stuff about the rumors out of the Sharks dressing room that a number of players on the team said they want him gone or they don't want to come back?
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, after the whole Winnipeg Jets like tracksuit thing and, you know, just his personality, it doesn't shock me players want him gone. And I saw a thing that like, I was reading a thread just about like, you know, how the team really should have kept Pavelski and how Evander Kane has just been kind of going really off the rails since Pavelski left, you know, without that kind of leadership to be like, you know what, like you need to focus on the game here, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, yeah, I could see that, you know, it's definitely a distraction. You know, he's, you know, all the storylines are about him and what is going on in his life instead of like the team and how the team's going to get better. So it's like, yeah, it's like, I don't know. I feel like they're better off without him for sure. But, you know, he does contribute offensively. So, you know, do they have a way to replace him? If they do, that $7 million would go probably a long way. I don't know. Moving away from Evander Kane, there's kind of an interesting thing here where they acquired Nick or Ryan Merkley through a trade. So now they've got Nick and Ryan Merkley, unrelated.
Yeah. They got Nick Merkley in the trade this year from New Jersey.
Yeah, so they have a prospect, Ryan Merkley, they drafted. Unrelated, no relation at all. So this is kind of funny. Like, you see two guys with the same name on the team, and you're like, oh, they must be like brothers or something. Nope. Nope.
Not even. Not even close.
Yeah. So, anyway, that was kind of funny. But, just getting back to some real stuff here, you know, they bring in Nick Bonino.
Andrew Cogliano as well.
Yeah.
So they're kind of filling up some depth spots here. Nothing too big. They don't really have the cap space, the cap flexibility to make anything major happen. They, you know, they're still paying Erik Karlsson $11.5 million per season, Brent Burns $8 million, Vlasic $7 million, Couture $8 million, Kane $7 million, like you talked about. So they've got a lot of money tied up in a lot and very few players, and they don't have much flexibility to make any moves. So, you know, this is a roster that's on paper is great. They have a ton of high end talent, but with aging, with injuries, they've been massively underperforming for a couple of seasons here.
Yeah, absolutely. The one shining bright spot for them last season, I think, was Mario Ferraro.
Absolutely.
Like, that guy kind of came out of nowhere.
I caught him early-ish in the season and picked him up for my fantasy teams, and he hits everything. So many hits per game, like, consistently every time, and even by the end of the season, he started getting a few points here and there. So, you know, it's kind of came out of nowhere, like you said, not really on anyone's prospect radar.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a, you know, great defensive rookie, definite bright spot. So yeah, I mean, like, it's like you said, they're good on paper, but the last few seasons has been pretty rough for them. So you know, that Eric Karlsson whole deal is really looking like it's not panning out well at all. So they really kind of hamstrung themselves with that, and then letting Pavelski walk, and you know, it's just they haven't done well since then. You know, especially because Pavelski, I think, wanted like a 3-year deal, and they didn't want to give it to him. And you know, he's been in Dallas for 2 years and has done extremely well, like scoring like 30 goals or something like that. So it's like, yeah, that's the guy he gave up, and he signed like a 1-year, $2 million deal or something with Dallas, and then they signed him again. So it's like, yeah. Anyway, San Jose, I see them at the bottom for sure, just because of like all the drama going on, and the fact that, you know, their defense is just yet another year older. You know, Eric Karlsson's been just devastated by injuries, which is sad, and it's even sadder because of just this cap hit. So,
yeah, they'll definitely be fighting with Anaheim down at the bottom. They have a chance, though. They have a chance of being decent, kind of competing, just because of how weak the division is, just because of the names, the players, the quality that they have on the team. But, I mean, chances are, following the trajectory of the Sharks the last couple of seasons, yeah, they're going to be at the bottom.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, this one will probably be quite short, but I did want to touch briefly on Seattle after the expansion draft. So, you know, we have a whole episode about the expansion draft. But, you know, since then, you know, what have they done? How does that kind of go into it? And so, you know, they've signed Jaden Schwartz. They've signed Alexander Wennberg. They've signed Marcus Johansson. And they signed Philip Grubauer. And so, you know, that's 4 guys, but I think that's pretty substantial what they can do to that team.
You know, Jaden Schwartz is immediately giving them a ton of depth in the top 6 for their forwards. Wennberg is a bit of a wild card, but, you know, with how weak they had been at center after the expansion draft, and with Yanni Gord out for a bit going into the season, you know, he gives them another option in the top there. And I believe it's confirmed that their Matty Beniers, their first round draft pick, is going back to university. So he won't be joining the team this season. So there's another, you know, another spot or player they won't have. But, you know, to get one of the reigning Vezina finalists there in Philip Grubauer, you know, they didn't expect that to happen. So they kind of go and take a couple of NHL caliber goalies in the expansion draft, and suddenly they get Grubauer fall into their laps. At a, you know, very reasonable $5.9 million per season as well. Like, that's perfectly reasonable for a goalie of his caliber. You know, assuming Grubauer isn't just a product of the environment he was in Colorado, you know, that's going to be huge for helping them succeed this season, giving them a chance at, you know, competing for a playoff spot in, again, a weak division.
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, I like Grubauer. I think he is talented, you know, just from following him since he was in Washington. You know, I think he's legitimately a good goaltender, not just like behind a good team. And, you know, I think that their defense is going to be solid. Like, they've got Giordano, they've got Alexiak, they've got Adam Larson, you know, Carson Soucy as well is, you know, solid. And then they've got, like, Vince Dunn for, like, power play stuff or whatever. So, like, I think that their defense is going to be really good. And then, you know, like you said, Jaden Schwartz being injected into the top 6. Alexander Wennberg, I know he's your guy as far as you picked him to have a bounce back last season off of his buyout from Columbus. You know, he looked really good in Florida. If you can get like the same chemistry with some people in Seattle, could be really good. And then Mojo too, Marcus Johansson, you know, just a depth guy that can play up and down the lineup. He's really good at zone entries on power plays. So, you know, that's solid. But, you know, Jaden Schwartz, I think, is due for a bounce back. He had a rough go last year. I think there was recently like an Athletic article that came out about it. And just like, you know, how his dad died and, you know, he was just kind of like lost and didn't know kind of what to do and just wanted to be there for his teammates. But, you know, he just wasn't fully there. So I think like being a year removed from that might be helpful for him, and he might be able to kind of get his game back to where it was. And so, yeah, I think they look a lot better.
That absolutely. It's amazing what a little bit of time and a few, you know, just a handful of moves on a 23 person roster, you know, the difference that those few moves can make to, you know, fixing it per se.
Yeah. And, you know, like we spoke about Montreal this way, you know, you're wearing the jersey, you just kind of got reminded of it, but you know, Montreal doesn't have like that superstar except for, I guess, Carey Price, but you know, this team kind of seems like it could be the same, where it's like, you know, yeah, they might not have that number one guy, but it might be like death by a thousand cuts out there, where it's like you can't keep up with the amount of you know, just rolling the lines that they can do, you know, throwing out all those guys. And it's kind of like Vegas when they came into League Two. It's just like, you know, have a bunch of scoring lines and just roll them, basically.
Yeah, when they have speedy energy forwards like Donskoy and Appleton to you know, just keep putting pressure on. When they have physical guys like Brandon Tanev, Nathan Bastian, Cali Yarncroke. I don't think Yarncroke's that physical, but you know, just being able to roll those types of lines and wear down the opposition in a way that maybe other high end focused teams can't.
Yeah, like you look at all these guys like Eberle, Schwartz, Yanni Gord, Alexander Wennberg, Donskoy, you know, maybe not Tana, but McCann, Yarncroke, and Appleton. Like those are guys that can score. And you know, like just anecdotally, you know, like I remember when Donskoy was on the top line when in Colorado when I think it was Rantanen was out. You know, he was playing with like the top line and he was scoring. And like Cali Yarncroke had like a streak where he was scoring like every game. And like Appleton, you know, might not have like huge totals, but they were scoring. You know, Alexander Wennberg too, and Yanni Gord. You know, like they've got a scoring touch, so it's like they've got a lot of guys that can score. So if they put them on different lines and find out those line combinations, you know, it could be that same sort of approach where it's like, you know, we may not have one dominant line, but we've got three pretty damn good lines, and they can all score. So, you know, I think that their kind of team composition has dramatically changed with just four guys. I mean, really three guys. You know, lesser extent Marcus Johansson, but really shakes it up. And then just being able to roll Grubauer and Dreger, like that's an amazing tandem.
Yeah,
which should be cool. Yeah, so like, I think they'll be you know. I don't know if I'll peg them to go to the finals like Vegas did in their first year, but like
we'll have to wait and see which player turns into their William Karlsson, who's going to score 40 this season.
Yeah, who's your pick for absolute breakout on this team?
Either Eberle on a bounce back or Colin Blackwell.
Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna say Alexander Wennberg, just that he explodes on this team.
Yeah, gets a chance. He seems like the right type, you know.
Yeah, like just getting a bit more of an opportunity. You know, he's a center. You know, he might be able to play on like the top line. Might be kind of like William Karlsson, center. You know, gets put up in the lineup just because of his position, and then, you know, has the right skill set to go from there and take advantage of it. So,
former Blue Jacket,
they'll be fun. Too. Yeah, he's got the connection.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be fun to watch them, I think, for sure. Okay, well, I guess we'll move on to the Vancouver Canucks. And Vancouver's hard to evaluate because they've got two guys that they still need to re-sign, and they're their biggest guys in Pettersson and Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, and
until they're signed, I find them extremely difficult to grade here.
Yeah, because, I mean, ultimately, you don't see these types of RFAs switch teams very often, so chances are something gets done. But the Canucks are in a very cap-strapped environment right now. They have $10 million right now. They have one extra person on their roster to help, you know, sit down to free up some space. But I'm not quite sure they're going to get much LTIR relief that's going to cover the rest of that.
No. So it's going to be tough. Because, like, if you think about it, like, maybe what would a fair deal for PD look like?
Well, at this point, he's probably set up to get probably around 6 to 7 probably.
Yeah, like, I mean, the Canucks are probably lucky that he didn't play a lot last season just so they can, you know, have that in there.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
the thing. I'm basing that lower number on the fact that he was not really playing. It wasn't that great last season at all.
Yeah.
But the hard one is because looking at what Cale Makar just got, you know, Quinn Hughes is going to be getting 8 to 9 probably.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah, so what the hell does that look like? Do they both agree to a bridge deal so that they can get paid more later or not?
Might have to. I mean, I could see Hughes wanting another year or two to prove himself on that. I could see that being reasonable for him. Just, you know, because he did kind of fall behind Makar a bit, because those two are like neck and neck all of the rookie seasons. But I feel like Makar really took a step forward over Hughes. So I could see maybe Hughes wants another year or two to see what he can do, what he can show, and, you know, catch back up a bit there.
Yeah. Yeah. So do they both take 5 for now for like 2 seasons or something, or 1 or whatever, and just see where it goes? But, you know, otherwise I think that Jim Benning has done an okay job at trying to save money everywhere else. With one pretty big exception fuck, god damn it. You know, they brought in Connor Garland and Ekman Larson, which are pretty dramatic changes. You know, Connor Garland adds another guy that can score to their middle six. Ekman Larson is, you know, they bring him in to be the guy, so he's got to play like the guy. We'll see. You know, he's instantly the highest paid player on the team. So
for now
yeah. And so we'll see if he can, you know, live up to that. And I think we've talked about it when the trade happened. I think he's got a good shot at doing that. And then Connor Garland, you know, another guy that can score. But then they also have, like, Jason Dickinson, you know, Justin Dowling, Phil Giuseppe, so some bottom six guys. I think Jason Dickinson will be
good.
A solid piece.
Absolutely. Those are really good bottom six additions that are probably going to be a significant improvement over what they had, just to give them reliable penalty killers, give them, you know, some physical presence there just to help because they were kind of weak in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, like I said, kind of at the beginning of the segment here, I don't know how to grade them right now because the two most important things of their offseason haven't happened yet. So, you know, if they sign them both, then great. But if they can't, oh shit. What
exactly.
Do we do?
And, you know, seems like we're going to be waiting until pretty close to training camp, if not preseason, regular season, before we get them both, because there isn't even a whole lot of talks or a lot of reports coming out of Vancouver about the two of them.
No, it's been pretty quiet. So I don't know, man. We'll see.
Yeah. And in terms of other stuff they had done, they bought out Braden Holtby after one season, brought in Yaroslav Halak for a year. You know, Halak's good. He's got, again, it's kind of a similar thing to Holtby, where they're just kind of an older goalies with cup experience, you know, a ton of a ton of winning experience, time with, you know, good organizations to back up Thatcher Demko is basically it.
Yeah. So, yeah, who knows what where the hell they'll be in the standings. I need to see what those signings are like, and, you know, how does Pettersson come back from his injury? Is he as good as he was before, or
He's now read a book in his life, so that might help.
He bought a book.
He bought. Oh, right. Yeah, he didn't read it. He maybe didn't read it yet, but he bought one.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess last but not least here, Vegas Golden Knights. So it's an interesting offseason for them.
Interesting, you know, is like the quietest one they've ever had.
Well, I mean, they got rid of Fleury.
I guess,
so
yeah.
That's pretty substantial. You know, they've got rid of their guy. He was the face of that franchise.
Yeah.
And they got rid of him. So
for nothing, for literally nothing at this point.
Yes.
They traded him for a prospect, a guy named Michael Hakkarainen. And then they've already bought him out to terminate his contract. So literally the Vezina Trophy winner just got traded for nothing. The season
and yet,
after.
The Oilers traded out a prospect and a pick for Duncan Keith. But the Vezina winning goaltender goes for free. Neat.
There you go, Ken Holland.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they with the cap space that they earned from getting rid of Fleury, they brought in Evgeny Dadonov. They shipped out Ryan Reeves. Or I guess they let him go. They picked up Nolan Patrick, who they still have to sign. They re-signed Alec Martinez. And then they brought in Laurent Brossoit from Winnipeg. They signed him. And so, yeah, it's... I don't know. It's just like a team that's... Like, we've kind of talked about this before. It's just like they're willing to do whatever it takes to get to that cup. And it's rough to look at. And, you, like, I mean, like, the players... There's so many stories about how... The shit that Vegas is doing. Like, Fleury found out on Twitter about him getting traded. And, like, they were like, oh, we were going to talk to him. And it's like, well, why didn't you?
Yeah, why... Why was he not, like, informed as this process was happening?
Yeah, it's... and, like, Eric Haula, he found out he was traded because, like, his parking pass didn't work anymore.
I didn't hear about this one.
Yeah. And then, who else was it? One of the original guys that was in the expansion draft, he found out through William Karlsson that he got traded. And so it's like they do everything but talk to the guy.
Does Vegas have any bridges left? They seem to be burning them all.
Well, that's exactly it, right? Like, I mean, like all these big UFAs are just lining up to come here, but like they're just treating everybody like a piece of meat and just being like. And apparently, like on some of those, like the players were all like super nervous because they didn't know if they were all going to get traded.
Yeah,
so it's like,
and especially if the team's not going to talk to you through the process.
Yeah,
you know, you're never gonna know if you're ever secure or stable where you are.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's got to be an uncomfortable place to play for that reason. Like you just never know when you're gonna get shipped out and bring somebody else in, for the next biggest guy out there. You know, apparently they're in on Eichel, so it's like, oh, are they gonna like trade out, you know, like William Karlsson and Riley Smith and or Marchessault, like they're the next, you know, main guys there. Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. The Capitals faced Vegas the first year that they were around, and so like I didn't like them after that, and ever since it's just been like they just are treating guys like crap and they just keep getting better. But there's a cost to that, right? Like, guys are eventually going to be like, I don't want to play there. You're just going to get rid of me in a year when you want somebody else. So, interesting. Like, the whole Fleury thing is just wild.
That really is. I mean, it was a joke last offseason, last playoffs, when it was the whole backstabbing thing from his agent. But this one was actually, like, you know, your face of your franchise. You bring him in as like the leading force of the team, the face of the team when you debut, and then you just kind of ship him off without telling him a couple seasons later after he wins the Vezina.
Fuck it. What?
You know, like, obviously they needed to, you know, trade rumors were going around him for a year because they needed to free up cap space, and, you know, he was the target. But why wasn't he involved in that process? Why wasn't he told as it was happening?
Yeah, you got to think, like, oh, hey, maybe we should tell the base of the franchise we've traded him. The bare minimum. Like, you can't find out from Twitter.
And then it was even unsure if he was even going to go to Chicago. Like, did he want to play in Chicago? Like, there was speculation when the trade happened that he was just going to retire.
Yeah.
Which I guess maybe is why they didn't get anything in return for him if he might not even play. But, you know, they go through that whole process and it very clearly wasn't even consulted on any of it, like, by anybody in either organization, I guess.
Yeah, so it kind of changes that whole stabbed in the back thing little bit.
The sword is back, everybody.
Yeah. It's, you know, obviously wasn't the coach this time, but, like, damn. Yeah. It's weird. And I'm glad that, you know, people are seeing kind of what Busch League organization Vegas is, because that's pretty bad. And that's how you earn a reputation in the league. It's just like a shitty team to play for. But, you know, because they do well in the standings, there's going to be guys that still want to go there. So yeah, I don't know. Anything to win. And then, yeah, Evgeny Dodonov, I don't know, that seems like a weird fit, but.
You know what, Vegas has had success with, you know, random forwards kind of struggling, needing a specific role or whatever to fit in. I mean, Dodonov had a couple of good seasons in Florida, put up 65 and 70 points back-to-back years a few years back. So one off season, one bad year in Ottawa, like, I wouldn't really factor that too much in because Ottawa wasn't a great team or a great fit for him. Goes to Vegas where there's more support, maybe a different role, a more sheltered role, and you can play again.
Yeah, but they've also had really bad experiences with Russian players, like Kadim Shipachov, where, you know, it's probably fault on both sides of that, but, like, it was just like, such a nightmare, you know, telling the guy he's going to be a big part of the team and then being like, oh, actually, you need to go to the AHL. And then, like, you know, they didn't have, like, great relationship there, so we'll see if Dodonov is a bit better of an experience there. But yeah, I mean, it's tough not to see Vegas as, you know, the strongest in the division. Well, again, yeah.
Vegas is basically the de facto Pacific winner because of how bad every other team is.
Yeah, and
not to diminish the fact that they do have a really good roster and they usually are competing at the, you know, with the best of them, but it's just the division is so weak that they pretty much are just a right on a shoe-in for the winning it.
Yeah, and it's tough for Arizona too, because they get to move to the Central and Vegas gets to stay in the Pacific, so it's like, aha, we get to be like the, you know, lord of these like weak teams. And yeah, like Arizona moves into like the Central, it's like gets stomped on. Play Colorado like 8 times in the year.
Yeah, Colorado, St. Louis, Dallas could be good as well.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I guess like Vegas is my pick to win the division here.
That wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.